Welcome to Teleforum, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President, General Counsel, and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of practice group Teleforum calls, become a Federalist Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Teleforum conference call. This afternoon's topic is the Courthouse Steps Oral Argument Teleforum on BP PLC versus Mayor and City Council of Baltimore. The oral arguments of this case just wrapped up a few minutes ago, hence the late start this afternoon, so we apologize for that brief delay. My name is Michael Wallen, and I'm the Assistant Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on our calls. Today, we are fortunate to have with us Phil Goldberg, who is Special Counsel for the Manufacturers Accountability Project, a project of the National Association of Manufacturers, and Washington, D.C. office managing partner at Shook, Hardy, and Bacon. After Phil gives his opening remarks on the case, we will then open up the floor for a live audience Q&A. Thank you for sharing with us today, and Phil, the floor is yours.
Great, Michael. Thank you so much for that introduction and for hosting, and obviously for the Federal Society for hosting this forum. I will, as Michael said, just provide some initial thoughts on the hearing. It just finished probably about 10, 15 minutes ago, and thought it was obviously a very interesting discussion. And then happy to talk about the issues, the litigation more generally, or even if people have some follow-up questions on the specific issues discussed today. As Michael said, I am special counsel to the Manufacturers Accountability Project, which was started about 3 years ago under the National Association of Manufacturers, specifically for the purpose of discussing the problems with the climate litigation campaign that is going on in the courts, and why these are issues really meant for policy issues that are federal and national in nature, and not for courts to decide in sort of a case by case ad hoc basis. With respect to the broader climate litigation, we believe that climate is a critical issue, and that America's political and business leaders need to be working together on the innovations to help us source and use energy much more efficiently so that we can meaningfully deal with climate change. This litigation, by contrast, is a counterproductive distraction. As some of you may have seen, last week we released a poll showing that Americans view this litigation as quote unquote unimportant, that it will not solve their climate concerns, and that this is not the way to pay for climate change impacts. They understand that dealing with the climate is not about casting blame, but is a shared responsibility, and we simply cannot sue our way out of climate change. We need to innovate meaningful solutions. And I will tell you, and as we shared with the Supreme Court in the amicus brief that we filed there with the National Association of Manufacturers, the good news is actually this path is already working. Manufacturers contributed 18% more to the value of the American economy over the past decade while reducing the carbon footprint of their products by 21%. So as you heard today, the argument before the court dealt with a much narrower procedural issue in this litigation, dealing with the scope of review of remand orders involving the federal officer removal statute. Our hope, and again, the purpose of our amicus brief in the court was to have the court view this in a broader context, much like the court did in 2011 when it decided AEP versus Connecticut. There, the court decided a discrete legal issue, displacement of federal tort claims, but it went on to talk about how the cases invoke federal issues that are better for Congress and the EPA to decide. And that's why soon after that, the Ninth Circuit dismissed its climate change suit, even though it was packaged differently. The Ninth Circuit said it would be incongruous to allow such litigation to be revived in another form. So that is what we're hoping the courts are going to do here, decide the legal issue, but provide their thoughts about this round of climate litigation. I thought the oral argument itself today was pretty straightforward and thoughtful on everyone's side. Several of the justices, including Justice Barrett, Justice Thomas, and Chief Justice Robert, raised the question of whether they should limit the any kind of ruling on this case to just the scope of review, or should they get to this broader question of whether the case belongs in federal or state court. I thought that was very interesting and poignant that at least three of them were directly asked that question. So that's clearly on their minds. Kavanaugh also tried to get each of the parties to discuss some of the practical aspects of why they want to be in state or federal court. And so that adds a fourth justice to sort of to at least the thinking about this case in broader terms. On the scope of review question, it seemed clear from all angles that the text is clearly on the side of the petitioners. From Breyer to Gorsuch to Kavanaugh, several of the across the political spectrum justices said that the text was I think it was Breyer said the linguistic argument was tough for the plaintiffs here. You had, again, Gorsuch and others saying that, and Kavanaugh saying that they thought the text was clear. In the end, Justice Barrett got into a colloquy with Vic Scheer on the on what he was saying was the pursuant to, with this somehow changed the plain meaning of the word order. But it seems clear that when the text says the order is reviewable, and they refer to the order in other parts of the statute the exact same way, and they refer to they're meaning the entire order, that the entire order is what is reviewable here. So that's the threshold question that several of the justices are looking at, and clearly indicated that was on the side of the petitioners. If they get past that, then they have to get to, so then what happens? If they agree that the text is what it is, then they seem to be trying to work through. How do we deal with parties that would excessively claim a federal officer removal statute just to get scope of review? Has that become an issue of jurisdiction, or has that become an issue of remedy? Kind of went back and forth on the secondary questions, assuming they get past the first one. I thought it was interesting that it was pointed out to Vic Scheer that he's on the opposite side of Justice Ginsburg on jurisdiction, both in the Omaha case, and as others know, he's also on the opposite side of Justice Ginsburg on climate change, as you wrote AEP versus Connecticut. Both were unanimous rulings. And an important precedence that this litigation is in the face of. At the end of the day, we do believe these cases belong in federal court. They are not tied. The allegations in them are not tied to any specific local community, Baltimore or anywhere else, which is exactly why these cases are being filed in so many jurisdictions. This is clearly a national or federal issue. And it was actually interesting that when Mr. Scheer said that all of these other filings suggest that, that the federal courts would be overwhelmed is a reason not to grant review. And so this is yet one more example of how merely by filing cases, he's trying to overwhelm and game the litigation system by trying to get at least some court in some jurisdiction to allow these cases to go forward and be willing to regulate global emission standards through state tort law. The truth is, as the New York, Judge Keenan in the New York case explained, these are emissions cases, and the litigation is trying to regulate behaviors and impacts far beyond their jurisdictions. And again, as our brief, our amicus brief explained, this is a purposeful effort by a litigation campaign to use the court to circumvent Congress and the EPA in order to drive a desired outcome on climate, when climate is something that needs to be dealt with, but needs to be dealt with at a much broader level, needs to consider, you know, our national energy policy needs to consider climate impacts, needs to consider the affordability issue for families who and businesses who rely on energy every day, whether you know to heat their homes, turn on the electricity, power their factories, what have you. And if this litigation goes forward, those costs can, you know, be hundreds of thousands of dollars more expensive. And that's one that needs to be considered. Also, energy independence needs to be considered. These are all aspects of what goes into establishing federal energy policy. And that can't be done in court, and it can't be done in state court in particular because of the national scope of what's at stake here. And so with that, I'll open up the floor to questions. Happy to talk about the issues more broadly. Happy to talk about anything somebody saw or heard in the argument today that that for consideration and see where this goes. So thank you again for joining in and participating in this call, and look forward to the Q&A.
Thank you, Phil, for that recap and helpful notes. Let's open up the floor for audience questions. We have one caller jumped in right away, so without further ado, we'll move to our first caller.
Hi, thank you guys for holding this. My name is Christine Condon. I'm actually a reporter with the Baltimore Sun. And I wanted to reiterate a question asked by Justice Kavanaugh, I believe, during oral arguments, wherein he asked both the petitioner and the respondent about sort of why, beyond just legal arguments, why they wanted the case to be heard in federal versus state court. You touched on sort of the legal reasoning there. I'm curious if you know, your party also considers that this case being heard in federal court would be sort of favorable to you all in some way.
I think the reason why you didn't really get an answer, or whether Justice Kavanaugh didn't get an answer on that, is because it's not about necessarily the practical implications of it and where we want to be, but it's about what's legally appropriate. And it's clear that these cases in deciding national energy policy and figuring out what to do about climate change is a national and even international objective. If we have, one judge in one state deciding emissions and national energy policy, that's not going to have, any kind of impact that we want to have. And so if the goal here is to do something about the climate, and that is the goal, we need to have our elected leaders accept that they need to be part of the solution, and then work with businesses and other elected leaders nationally and internationally to drive solutions that can actually impact the climate. The only way to do that is to figure out how to innovate the new technologies that we need to source and use energy more effectively. This attempt at using state tort law inappropriately to drive those solutions is a distraction, and it's not productive, and it's not going to get us there. And so that's why I think you heard more of a legal response than a sort of a desire. What parties are desiring. It's just about where the appropriate place is to make these decisions.
And our queue is open if anyone would like to join. And Phil, I'd like to ask you just sort of what your sort of prediction is for the case, or how you think it might end up coming out along with the nine justices.
I always hate to prognosticate when it comes to what I think, nine of the smartest people in the country are going to do. But having said that, it struck me that you had a significant number of justices concerned about the textual the text of the statute here that they're being asked to apply. The statute is pretty clear, and the justices across the political spectrum seem to understand that. I think where the rubber is going to hit the road is the next question. Then what? How will they deal with the potential for abuse? How will they deal with whether if you try to assert a federal officer statute ground frivolously, or if it's not plausible? then what happens? Is that a matter of jurisdiction? Is that a matter of remedy? I think that's where we can see the court going in various directions. But if they stick to the text of the statute, it seemed like, without counting, individual justices, that a plurality or majority of the court seemed to think that the text of the statute was pretty clear.
Gotcha. And we do have three other questions that popped into the queue.
Yes, thank you. A moment ago, the speaker said that the problem is what to do about climate change. That was not an exact quote, but a pretty close paraphrase of what you said. It sounds to me then like the National Association of Manufacturers, the defendants in this lawsuit, or whoever, are really just fighting about policy and program rather than liability. In other words, you've already conceded the game, and the issue is how to get to the end zone so the other side wins. And by how many points? If that's the case, and it sounds to me like that is the case, it really comes down to whether state courts in 50 states or what, 120 or 30 federal district courts. I don't know how many district courts there are, but 100, 130 approximately. Should be playing with that policy decision and the issue of liability having been conceded. I don't see the benefit of fighting about policy issues in federal courts over state courts rather than just getting Congress to intervene and do what you say, quote, figure out what to do about climate change. Again, the problem having been conceded, the issue is only what to do, how to answer the problem. So I'm rather confused. Maybe you can straighten me out.
Sure. And what's your name?
My name is Tim.
Tim. Tim, thank you for the question. So I think I'll try to do my best to kind of parse this out for you. So the liability question is, is not something that's being conceded at all. Energy to you, me, and other other people is not a liability inducing event. It is part of modern society. It is what these manufacturers do. It is what we want them to be doing. In fact, the cases themselves disclaim any attempt to impact the sale or promotion of these fuels because they know that would be a non-starter. So the liability is something that we do not believe that selling energy is a liability-inducing event. That doesn't mean that there is to go to sort of the next level. I think is what needs to be done with regards to climate change and whose responsibility is to do something about climate change. The answer is this is a shared challenge and a shared responsibility where we all need to be coming together to figure out how to deal with this in a responsible way. Cities like Baltimore and the other ones bringing these cases shouldn't be trying to remove themselves from that discussion by trying to blame other, specific industries or blame others and say, hey, you sold us these products, so therefore you need to figure this out. No, this is a situation where we all need to be in this together, and we all need to figure out what needs to happen. And the way to do that is through setting national energy policy through Congress and EPA and the other policy-making branches of government. So, the end result we believe that makes the most sense is for these energy policy decisions to be made by the policy-making branches of government, and that is Congress and the federal agencies. The question about whether these cases belong in state or federal court, which is what the issue was, the part of what was before the court today, is that these are inherently federal issues. You're talking about national and international policies relating to the use of fossil fuels. And the allegations here have nothing to do with any conduct that's going on within Baltimore or within any of the other cities. This is about national, international emissions, national, international use of these fuels, and that's where the policy decisions about how we have to innovate and how we have to deal with that needs to be made is at the national and international levels. So I hope that kind of breaks out some of the and answers your questions. in that regard. And it occurred to me, Michael, while you're kind of lining up the next question, in answer to Christine's question about why, you know, state versus federal court, you know, in this is the second round of climate litigation. The first round ended when the U.S. Supreme Court decided AEP versus Connecticut, and it said that federal common law or federal tort claims on this, on climate policy are displaced by the Clean Air Act. And Congress gave that responsibility to the EPA to answer these very questions. And so, they know that the only that they're trying to repackage this litigation in order to drive, you know, energy policies. These are political lawsuits meant to achieve a policy objective. And the only way that they can try to do that is to avoid the federal courts. And so, you know, that's why they're filing all these claims in state court, because that's part of their political and legal strategy for trying to leverage these lawsuits to drive a policy objective. And that, frankly, is not the proper use of the courts, and why, you know, sort of the subtext for why I think the Supreme Court, granted review is looking at these issues and hopefully will provide some guidance on these broader questions as it decides the legal issue that was before it today.
We'll now move to our next caller.
Hi, this is Christine with the Sun again. I just have an additional question that I wanted to ask. And sorry if this question is a bit redundant, but would you mind going through how, if the court does in fact agree that the whole order ought to be considered when there are issues regarding federal officers and civil rights, that the whole order ought to be considered, how does that help you guys going forward? Would you mind just going through how that would be favorable?
Sure. And thanks, Christine, for that question. So the Fourth Circuit here and several of the other circuits, when they looked at the remand orders, they said we can only look at the federal officer statutory grounds for removal. We can't look at the other grounds for removal, the other reasons why these cases belong in federal court. And because they didn't find that the defendants were acting as federal officers, they said, we're not going to overturn the order to remand the cases to state court. But, you know, if you look at the Judge Alsup in the San Francisco case went through those other grounds and said these are clearly federal issues, and explained how breathtaking, quote unquote, breathtaking the allegations are, and how the use of fossil fuels was, you know, imperative to modernization over the 20th century. And so if you look at the broader issues, it's, you know, that is something that should drive the courts and the appellate courts here to determine that the cases belong in federal court. And then once they get to federal court, then they can work through the issues there. Without the ability to look at all the reasons why the courts remanded the case back to a state court, it's hamstringing the federal circuits and their ability to review the most salient issues before it. And so it makes sense to let the circuit courts do their job, to let them review the entirety of the order, and then make a decision about where it can proceed. They may choose federal court, they may choose state court. We think they're going to choose federal court, but there's no reason to tie their hands, or frankly, that Baltimore should be afraid of what the federal circuits might determine on those other issues.
We'll now move to our next caller in the queue.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. This is Mary Ann Zaki. I'm an associate at Morgan Lewis, and find this topic interesting, so appreciate this teleforum. You've touched on it a little bit, but, you know, I think with the comments that, you know, this is an area of law that the EPA and Congress, you know, are better suited to deal with these issues, do you find the argument compelling that, well, if that's the case, then, you know, let's wait until Congress, you know, makes it clear in the statutory text that, you know, orders with regards to, you know, climate change or some sort of environmental pollution should be in federal court, or, you know, implemented into 1447, that, if, you know, if the court rules that it should be in state court, that that remand order should be appealable. Do you think there's merit in that kind of argument? I know it would obviously lead to cases being tried in state court until Congress makes it clear, but do you think, you know, that that might be a possibility? And also, second question, just curious with regards to the timing. I know appellate courts and the Supreme Court, especially, you know, sometimes no telling when this might be set for decision. But do we know or have any sense of when we might expect a ruling on this? Thank you.
Sure. And Marian, thank you for that. I'll answer the second one first, just because it's a quicker answer. We would expect that they would decide this case before they adjourn in June or the end of June. So that, you know, I would expect something this spring. On the first question, you know, I think the statute is pretty clear on its own. And so, you know, sitting here and saying, well, we should, you know, we should get better clarity from Congress is something that is not, you know, it would be, you know, the court shouldn't sort of absolve themselves of the responsibility to enforce what Congress said they should do and say, hey, we're not going to do that. And if Congress really wants us to do it, then they'll tell us, you know, otherwise. That's not the way that, you know, the system works. And frankly, that's a good thing because we can't have, you know, each court kind of deciding are they going to follow Congress or not follow Congress and, you know, follow or not follow a statute and say, well, we're not going to follow it. But if Congress really wants us to, they'll come back and tell us. That's, you know, that's the kind of, you know, I think a recipe for lawlessness that, you know, doesn't serve anyone any good.
We'll now move to our last caller in the queue.
Hi, thanks for doing this, Phil. It's Dawn Reeves with Inside EPA. So I want to ask you a question. So you said that, you know, this is not, you know, it shouldn't be, climate policy is important, but it shouldn't be handled in court. It should be, you know, Congress and the executive branch. But I would note that NAM and many of these industry groups, you know, they sue over any EPA rule that has to do with climate change. They lobby Congress against, you know, anything doing with climate. They say it's an international problem, not a national problem. And I'm wondering if you can just kind of, I'm not asking you to endorse any specific policy, but just tell me why this isn't a shell game.
Well, Dawn, it's good. It's good to hear from you. And thank you for that question. You know, these are national and international, you know, issues. They're certainly not state tort law issues. So that's something I think that should be clear. The fact that, you know, these various organizations are working with Congress and EPA and others to try to establish good policies on climate and may not agree with everything that, you know, the other side would like to get done doesn't mean that they're against any kind of action. It means that they want to drive that they have maybe a different opinion on what those actions should be. The inherent problem with this litigation is that the people who are trying to pursue a specific agenda on climate are saying, well, we're not happy that that, you know, we're not able to get our way in Congress or in or the federal agencies. And so we're going to try to circumvent them and file cases in state courts to try to drive those same, you know, the very same outcomes that they were trying to achieve in, you know, through Congress and EPA and just and weren't successful at. The fact that a consensus has not grown around how to deal with climate and our impacts on it and what we're going to do about it indicates that this is a very complicated issue with a lot of different factors that need to be considered. And state courts hearing tort claims through rules of evidence where they can't look at the broader questions at stake here is the exact wrong place for those kinds of decisions to be decided. And so, I have every confidence that if we can have real leadership at the federal level, bring people in to make it, you know, to determine what would be meaningful solutions to the climate and what's going to actually make a difference here, we'll end up with the kind of solutions that we need and the kind of policies that we need that are going to foster the innovations that are going to help us source and use energy much more efficiently. That's got to be the end game. Just trying to penalize certain energies, the energy sector, or come up with proposals that aren't going to get it done at the end of the day, doesn't mean that just because you might oppose those doesn't mean that you're opposing any progress. It means you want to see progress, but that's just not the right way to get it done. And Don, I hope that helps answer your question.
All right, we've reached the end of our question queue for today. So, Bill, any other closing thoughts before we close?
I just want to thank everybody for making the time to jump on the call today. And obviously, we got started a little late because the argument ran a little bit longer than we were expecting. And I need to obviously gather some thoughts if I was going to get on the call here. But I think where this case heads and where the larger issue of dealing with the climate heads is something that needs to be addressed and needs to be done in a very thoughtful manner. Using state tort law to drive energy policy and try to scapegoat, individual, industries or entities for what is truly a shared global challenge is the wrong way to go. Folks look at the Manufacturing Ability Project website, they'll see, we released a poll last week that showed that the American people truly understand that this is that dealing with climate change is not about pointing fingers and placing blame. It's about all of us coming together to figure out how to deal with this problem. And that's where we are headed towards, hopefully, and what we look in the dialogue and the discussion that we look forward to engaging in.
Absolutely. And on behalf of the Federalist Society, I'd like to thank our expert for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Teleform, a podcast of the Federalist Society's practice groups. For more information about the Federalist Society, the practice groups, and to become a Federalist Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.